Are you ready in the back?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. We'll call the meeting of the Sanitation District to order on June 6th, 2018. Call to order, roll call, please.
Chair, or Vice Chair Barbara Nichols?
Here.
Alt Director Karen White?
Here.
Director Jim Hill?
Here.
Please stand and join us for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. We have agenda review. Anybody have?
I have nothing.
Jim?
Nothing to add.
Okay.
I wanted to bring to the board's attention that we have a letter from that we received from Julie Tacker, which we'd like to include under written communications.
Okay.
To be discussed at that item, if there's any discussion.
That will be item 7A.
Correct.
Public comments on items not appearing on the agenda.
Good evening. I am Julie Tacker, and I have never seen you bring a letter of mine to a board meeting under communication, and I appreciate it, and I hope I'll get to speak to it when it does come up later in the agenda. Tonight, my items that are not on the agenda that I'd like to ask you again to rescind the censure of Mayor Hill, to censure Mayor Scholz, to censure and publicly correct the misstatements made by former director Mary Lucy. Tonight, I want to ask you to follow the Brown Act as you promised on April 18th. I'd like to ask you to answer the district attorney's letter of April 17th regarding the Brown Act violation of April 4th, 7th, April 7th. I'd like you to consider civil action against John Wallace. I am wondering where an RFP for legal counsel is. I know that your board directed that. It doesn't go unnoticed that Gil Trujillo has not been here since Keith Collins was hired. My understanding from the brief conversation I had with Mr. Collins when he was hired by your board was that he would be used on occasion, and he appears to have taken the lead role, which may be a good thing, but that's what the RFP process will vet, is who is best at what best price for your district. I would like to correct a misstatement made at the last board meeting by another member of the public. That member of the public came up and spoke to the Cambria Community Services District and in a brine presentation that took place in Grover Beach. The brine presentation that did take place in Grover Beach was given solely by Gerhard Huebner. The president of the board of Cambria CSD was in the audience and came to the podium and spoke to the item in less than 3 minutes and sat down. There was no other staff from Cambria there. There was no presentation by the Cambria CSD regarding the brine. So I just wanted to set that record straight, and that is part of why I continue to ask that your board set the record straight on the misstatements of former director Mary Lucy.
Shirley Gibson Halcyon. So I'd like the board to take a minute and just erase everything from those comments, erase those from your mind. I want to address equal standing when people come before the board as ratepayers versus non-ratepayers. Ratepayers, a non-ratepayer doesn't live within Arroyo Grover or the OCSD. They are not part of the election process by way of voting for their city councils or the OCSD. They don't have ownership. They have no investment. They bear no risk. Almost everything that is discussed by the sanitation district concerns district funds. Any monies spent are done with the approval of the ratepayers. A non-ratepayer is just an outsider trying to spend other people's money, our money. To go back and censure or take someone to court, write a letter, all those things cost money. We are the watchdogs of our communities, not a non-ratepayer. Ratepayers live here, district funds come from us, we carry the risk, we elect the board indirectly. We are the watchdogs. A non-ratepayer does not have equal standing with ratepayers. Their comments are irrelevant. Thank you.
Anyone else?
I'm Ron Arnoldson. I'd once again like to ask you to consider a civil suit against John Wallace. And I believe maybe one of the reasons that it hasn't taken place is because Mrs. Nicholas has a conflict of interest because her husband sat on the board when Mr. Wallace was the district administrator of this board. So I think any decision that she would make would be somewhat convoluted because she would have to take her husband's part of the sitting on the board as part of that decision. So I think if it doesn't move forward, and well, you know, actually I think that, you know, she should actually step down or rescind herself on that, and it should move forward. And that may be tough because there'd only be two board members that would speak on be voting on the issue. But I really feel that you have a strong civil suit against John Wallace. He pled guilty. There's no doubt about that. So I think if you're prudent, you'd move forward and get some of that money back from his E&O insurance. It wouldn't hurt him a bit. And that's really what should happen with this board. I think you're a delinquent not doing that.
Chris Victorine. And I also would like to encourage the board to pursue civil action against John Wallace. The Knudsen report was very thorough and clearly identified in the financial analysis section that there was a decline in cash and cash equivalents of about $7 million during the 10-year period ending 2012, the last full year before John Wallace retired as district administrator. Additionally, after 2001, there was a dramatic increase in Wallace Group billings that peaked in the period during 2009-2010. After the grand jury investigation began in 2011, the monthly billings decreased substantially until the retirement of John Wallace in 2013. You, as the board of directors, are responsible for governance. You are doing the ratepayers a real injustice to completely ignore the fact that John Wallace pleaded no contest to two misdemeanor counts of conflict of interest. The felony counts were not pursued because the board of directors drugged their feet defending Wallace, and the felony case had statute of limitation issues, not that there wasn't a strong case to substantiate wrongdoing. Please do not ignore the fact that during his tenure, the district's reserves dwindled by almost $7 million. While the Wallace Group did more and more work for the district, making profits at the expense of ratepayers. Do the right thing for the ratepayers and pursue a civil case against John Wallace, please. Additionally, I would like to clarify something from the director bylaws. Section 6.2 says, members of the board of directors shall exercise their independent judgment on behalf of the interest of the entire district, including the residents, the property owners, and the public as a whole. The general public comments are valuable and should not be considered unimportant. Thank you.
Good evening, Patty Welsh, Arroyo Grande. I put in a public records request on the 11th of last month. 10 days after I put in the records request, I got a note from Mr. Sweet asking that I narrow down the parameters of what I was looking for. So I did. I got a response finally today, 25 days later. Not professional, not acceptable. This is one reason I'm going to say, when they're through with their contract, it is time that we cut Mr. Sweet free from this district. He thinks this is a laughing matter now. I don't see it as a laughing matter. We have a district that has problems. We need to run it professionally and correctly. Thank you.
Colleen Kubel, Roy Randy. Just wanted to touch on a couple of things that on general public comments. The general comments made by Julie Tacker is something that the board needs to hear because nobody in this district is as knowledgeable and, yes, as far as the public is concerned, to bring those up for the board to look at and consider. Otherwise, the people don't know what's going on, and it needs to be heard whether she is a ratepayer or not. She's very knowledgeable and needs to be here, needs to bring those subjects up for some members of the board who are not as articulate in what's going on. And it's important to do that. Anybody can come up to this podium and say anything, and you will listen to them. I'm sure you will. So it's just that important. It doesn't matter, ratepayer, whatever. It needs to be heard.
Anyone else? Okay, we'll bring it back to the board. And
Madam Chair, if I could make a brief comment. I went to the Peace Officers Memorial in Morro Bay and met District Attorney Dow at that event. And the conversation turned to the letter his office had sent, and he requested that the district did send a response to his letter, which I believe one of our counsel had advised was not required. Mr. Dow admitted that the letter was not required per se, but he said it would be appreciated in good form if we responded.
All right. We will take care of that. I think we should go ahead and take care of that.
I have no objection.
Agree.
So noted.
All right. So noted. Thank you very much. Okay, the consent agenda. Does anybody want to pull any items?
I don't.
No?
No.
I don't want to pull anything. I do have a couple questions.
Okay, let's proceed with the questions.
On item 5A, there's a bill from AutoSys related to redundancy. Can you explain what that is?
They work on the SCADA system. So they're working on implementation of SCADA for the redundancy project.
Related to the redundancy project?
Yes.
Okay, thank you for that. And then there's one from Ferguson for $2,500 for structure maintenance. Can you explain what that is?
I am not positive what that is.
Okay, thank you. Item 5C includes the letter.
On the warrants, I'd like to point out that there's been an update passed out, so that we approve it.
Yes, thank you. I've already mentioned the Dan Dow letter related to item 5C. On the financial report, item 5D, why is brine disposal not counted as an operating income? In other words, for Fund 19.
Well, generally, operating funds are those that are collected from our annual, our monthly charges, basically. And that's pretty much exclusively what they are. And anything else that is collected has been determined to be non-operating funds. So it's... certainly, I'm sure you could look at it several ways. I don't know what the advantage or disadvantage is either way, but I think that's traditionally how it's been done, and those funds have been specifically identified as operating were those funds collected from our monthly charges.
Okay, I still find that confusing, but thank you for the explanation. Then what... other sales go into Fund 20. There's a little over $5,000 in, quote, other sales. And I wonder why that's in Fund 20, which is expansion.
We're working on that.
This is referring to item 5D, page 2.
Right. We're seeing what is it? We'd have to look further to give you exactly what that's for. I guess it's a one-time thing that happened. That's where it went in.
Okay, because typically new construction hookup fees go to Fund 20,
yes.
And virtually nothing else does. So
surplus something.
We'd have to look at see specifically what those are for, and we'd be glad to do that and get back to you.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And I guess the last one then, it says water recycling reimbursement of $68,000 again for Fund 20. I would think we would desire to have funds received that Fund 20 would probably be our last choice, but... just noting that.
I think it was determined some time ago by this board to put in the water recycling funds from Fund 20. So if you'd like to, if the board would like to direct for that change to occur, then the board can certainly do that, but I believe that is prior direction of the board.
Okay, those are my questions.
Okay, thank you very much. We have a motion.
I'm going to have to rescind myself on item 5B.
Okay.
But I'm okay on 5C because I watched it. Watched the actual meeting.
Okay. Jen?
I will second after public comment.
Okay. Public comment first.
So are you not keeping on consent? So
you're...
We are still on consent. Public comment.
This is public comment on the consent calendar. So,
correct.
Yes, that's what I thought. All right, so with regard to the warrants, I see a lot of money, as expected, on the redundancy project. And I asked last meeting, and I think I saw some head shaking at the time, that a status report of all consultants' work be brought to your board so that you can see how that money is flowing out and what product you have for it. You have several consultants working on that project, and I think you need to know where you're at with that. I noticed in the financial report that you did get $18,000 Wallace restitution. I would like to know if there's a cover letter with that and that explains what exactly that is for. We know that it's restitution for pleading guilty on some misdemeanors, but what exactly were those misdemeanors? What exactly is he repaying you for? What did he do wrong that he admits to your district? What actions is he correcting by paying restitution? And then the item that is the minutes of May 16th, there is a complete omission of, I have the agenda from May 16th. There's an item 9A and an item B. In your minutes, there is no 9B. So I think that needs to be amended and the report out associated with that is not reflected either. So there's actually no report out reflected in any of the minutes on either of the items that were held in closed session. So I think you need to relook at these minutes and fix them and maybe bring them back next time.
Thank you.
I would hope when we come to one of these meetings that questions can be answered. It amazes me that we have a secretary who doesn't know what's put in a ledger.
Ron Arnelson again. I've been attending these meetings for, I think, 3 or 4 years now. Kind of have watched a nice progression, mostly downhill. When I first started coming to these meetings, the questions that people asked, such as Mr. Hill, were answered very astutely and quickly by the plant manager. He knew all this, everything that happened at the plant. He was able to answer where the money came from, where what funds it came from, and all that. Great job. I'm glad you ran him off. It's a really, really nice job.
Anyone else? Okay, then we shall go on to our next item. Oh, no, we need a motion.
Madam Chair, I think we had a motion, and because of, I'm concerned that item 9B was not addressed on the minutes of May 16th, I'll withdraw my second for that, but I am comfortable at this time with 5A, 5B, 5D, and 5E. And I would request that we bring the minutes back after consideration of the report on the closed session.
Okay, thank you very much.
I would also support that.
Yes.
Although it wasn't an action to the motion.
And agreed. So we are approval on 5A, 5B, 5D, and 5E.
Yes.
Except for I'm not voting on B. So do you want to make it two motions? I can't
yes,
vote on
me. Yes, let's do that.
Do you want to restate?
Let me restate a motion then to approve. First of all, 5A, 5D, and 5E.
5D.
Yes.
5C.
I'll go ahead and second that one if you don't want to, Madam Chair.
Second. And motion pass.
We need to have a vote.
All are present, all in agreement, say aye.
Aye.
All right, now we're ready to go to action item number six.
I would also move approval of item 5B.
Oh, okay. I second that. All approved? Okay.
I'll vote aye.
Aye.
Okay. 5C?
I would request that we table item 5C for amendment.
And yes. Clarification?
Yes.
So we'll continue 5C to the next meeting for correction.
Please.
Review and correction.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. Now we can go to 6A, Technical Consultants and Plant Operations Report.
Before you, this evening, we have the Consultants Report. I think that as Director Hill had the opportunity to see, there's a lot going on at the plant. We have the digester rehabilitation project underway. They are wrapping up sandblasting of the project on the interior walls, hopefully today, possibly tomorrow. We also have significant completion on the biosolids handling facility. It's not completely complete, but the pads poured out. There's some minor things to be improved on it. We have the digester valve replacement project that's underway, and we're hoping that we get that completed fairly shortly. We've been working with the USDA on the financing. We're working on filling out the application and getting it approved through that bureaucracy. And I'll be glad to, and the rest of it is before you, and we will be glad to answer any questions that we might.
I have nothing.
I do have a couple. First is, it says all process values were within permit limits, but it appears that fecal coliform is not.
Can you help me?
This is item 6A, page 4.
Okay.
The statement's made that all process values were within permit limits. It looks as though fecal coliform didn't meet the limit at one point.
It does appear that way, as you are aware. I think that's for the average, but that's still an issue. As you're aware, we're budgeting for a item to look at the fecal coliform. We're quite frankly befuddled because we are experiencing, on the same day we'll have a fecal coliform issue, we will also be using a fair amount of chlorine, and there's no... We're befuddled because we're not sure how that can possibly happen, where we would end up with chlorine residual and fecal coliform reporting within the same time period. It's theoretically not possible. So something is not right there. It's an issue I know the plant struggled with for a number of years. We've recently received a proposal from MKN to take a look at it. They have some ideas about what may be the issue there, and we're hoping to pursue that as soon as we have an approved budget and that item is funded. So,
thank you.
Noting that this reporting period started May 10th, we had a previous violation on May 1. And the chlorine usage in pounds per day I mean, we're given the low and the high for the month, but not a correlating calendar so that we can't tell whether high chlorine usage is coupled with high fecal or not. But it certainly would appear to me that the reported number here is high, is certainly in excess of the 2,000
limit.
2,000 limit, yes. If that is indeed a violation, has it been reported to the state?
All of our sampling results are reported to the state. So as you will have noted, we may not find out their determination on that violation for several years because they have a process where every 3 or 4 years they bundle up your violations and send them to you.
I'm aware of that, but I also think it's incumbent upon us in the interest of transparency and regulatory relationships that we inform them if we exceed one of our permit limits.
I'm receiving input from our superintendent that we did not have a violation, and the chart is for the entire period of May. So this was the violation that occurred prior to that.
Okay, well, you can see my concern then, because sorry, that's not what is stated on the report.
And, you know, we share that concern, and that's why we're trying to seek out some answers there.
Okay, I appreciate that. Further on the O&M projects, talking about reinstalling motors on the centrifuge and so forth, placing it in the building, that I presume is our centrifuge back from repair?
Yes, that's our centrifuge.
Okay. Then a couple questions on the technical consultants report. 6A, page 1 at the bottom, the state financing. This is, report has been unchanged for quite a while regarding completion of items to make our application to the state more favorable, although it claims that it's complete. What is the status of that?
They actually are, review of that has happened, a review of the items that primarily were cultural evaluation and air quality have been reviewed just last week, actually, by the staff, and they've been submitted along with the package to the state.
Okay. Thank you for the update. And kind of similarly with the USDA, this discussion is underway, and that's been the last word for some time.
Yeah, that may stay that way for quite some time because their process is a federal process, and the discussion can be extensive.
Okay.
But I actually physically had a conversation with the representative from USDA just last week to get into their online system to file applications, and we are on their online system and we're building our application right now.
Okay, thank you. And then regarding the memorandum of agreement with Pismo Beach for siting Central Coast Blue at the district site, is that, I'm hoping that that's in a very near upcoming agenda.
I'm awaiting a response from Pismo Beach to our response to them.
Okay, and then I'd also like to see on an upcoming agenda status of our financing for the redundancy project. Just a modern, updated discussion where that all is.
As you're aware, Bartles and Wells is involved in that process, and I'm not sure until Bartles and Wells has completed that process if there would be much value in that, other for us to say Bartles and Wells is still involved in that process. So we can certainly advise the board about timing for that, but I don't know what the value would be to bring an item before you until I got something Bartles Wells to present.
Okay. No more questions.
Okay. On some of these long-term project, maybe just an update from at least once a month on, you know, we're still looking at it, it's still in process.
Okay.
Might be helpful.
Do we need formal action to receive and file it, or?
It's just a receive and file, so.
Okay.
Yeah. Okey-dokey. Okay. Public comment, please.
Julie Tacker, and I'll start with the plant operations report. It seems to me, and we've asked for this before, and Mr. Jones was here just once in the last maybe 6 months. Historically, the superintendent or chief plant operator is at these meetings. He's only needed briefly, and it's to answer these hard questions about the operations. So I would again encourage that he be here for just that short amount of time. With regard to the work that has been sent to the state, I can guarantee you that I'll be requesting copies of this cultural and biological reports that were sent to State Revolving Fund. And I'm curious, with these are NEPA items, and that there's a public process for the NEPA review, and when is that coming to your board and to the public to comment on? With regard to the MOA with Pismo Beach, I understood there was already a draft of the MOA some months ago. It was in these technical reports from your consultants. That has since been taken out of the reports, but clearly your board directed staff to work with Pismo. So I'm kind of confused by the delay in getting it before your board. With regard to the brine, my community is a customer of yours in the way is with regard to your brine outfall. So I may personally not be a customer of yours, but my community is. And so the visit by Brad Snook and Cynthia Rapoglia back in February, I understand sort of opened up or we recognized that you do not have standard operating procedures for the brine disposal, and that it says that work is ongoing. Well, February, this is June. This is a good long time. So I think we should have seen a draft somewhere already. And then where it says upcoming agenda items, it says district council evaluation. I think your bylaws require district council evaluation at a certain interval per year. But I recall distinctly that your board asked for a request for proposals for new council, and if the current councils wanted to submit proposals, then they certainly could. So I think that's in error.
Thank you. Anyone else? Then we shall move on to item 6B, public hearing and adoption of resolution number 2018-394 for collecting fiscal year 2018-2019 annual wastewater charges for the community of Oceano through the county property tax roll.
Good evening, Board. The item before you tonight is a consideration of the county property tax roll submission for collection of the OCSD areas. Operating costs from each property. We have submitted a report that we believe is consistent with the code for submittal to the board, and that a public hearing is required. And there is an updated version which was provided to you, which now includes connections to the Oceano Community Services District, which happened this year. So new properties that have connected to our system and their monthly billings. If there's any questions, we will do our best to answer them. And with that, I'll deliver to the board.
Questions?
I have none. This is also the public hearing?
Yes.
Okay. Just making double sure.
I have no questions.
No questions? All right. Seeing no questions, open public comment, please.
Julie Tacker, and I really just have a question. The sanitation district boundaries are not coterminous with the Oceano Community Services District boundaries. And in my case in point is below the levee south of town, there you do have boundary. I don't know how many of those people are your customers, but my question is, how are their rates collected? Because they are outside of the CSD district.
There's an area that is collected by Roy Grandy in that area. So, I mean, there is an area that's actually looks like it's part of OCSD that Roy Grandy performs the collection, has done that traditionally over the years. I don't know if this is that area.
I'll send you a map of the district, of your district's boundaries, and it does cross the levee and go south into the horse area. And so I'd just be curious if those people are, if it's just a geographical area or if they actually are being collected sewage. I honestly don't know the answer.
We'd be glad to take a look at that, because any opportunity there is to collect rates
funds,
that we're not
then
doing,
do
we're your people.
Okay.
Anyone else? Okay. Then we shall proceed to...
We're looking for approval of resolution number 2018-394.
Oh, that's right. We have a resolution here. Do we have a motion to approve the resolution?
Madam Chair, I will move adoption of resolution 2018-394 for collecting fiscal year 2018-19 district annual wastewater treatment charges from the community of Oceano through the county property tax roll.
Reluctantly, I'll second it.
Roll call.
Let's do a roll call. All agreed?
May we have
We'd like to do a roll call.
A roll call.
Chair Nichols?
Yes.
Director Hill?
Yes.
Director White?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Next item.
The next item is a public hearing and adoption of resolution approving the budget for fiscal year 2018-19. Before you this evening, we have the budget, which we have brought to you last meeting for your input. We have endeavored to respond to your input at the last meeting and bring before you tonight what we are proposing as the final budget. We are certainly open to your comments and suggestions, and if there's any questions.
I really have no questions. How about you, Jim? I have none, but Jim probably does.
Let's see. Under Fund 20, this is 6C, page 3, there was a 1981 ordinance which set up Fund 20 and how that was to be reserved for capacity expansion. Can we get a copy of that ordinance? And the statement is made that the fund balance available that resides in the county in the amount of $862,370. How is that determined?
Are you asking?
Yeah, I'm asking where the $862,370 comes from.
That is the present balance held in the county in a separate account.
Okay, so
that theoretically is the summary of connection fees for a good period of time. Given there's that much in it, I'm going to say a really good period of time.
A long period of time. So is that, are those monies also accounted in our recent, where going back to item 5D, the county, the amount in the county treasury pool was $3,788,208. Is this money that is in Fund 20, is that part of that, or is that separate?
I believe it is.
That's
Amy, would you? Yeah, I believe it is. That's total of all funds in that reside at the county.
Okay. Thank you for the clarification on that. Then, Fund 26 on 6C, page 4, it says supported by transfers from other funds, but in fact, that's supported from Fund 19.
Correct.
Further down the page where it says conclusion, the budget reduces administrative costs by $441,800. Significant project savings are proposed in items pertaining to legal fees and miscellaneous engineering costs. I would suggest that that is a return to normal from something that was wildly out of control during the last year. Expenditures exceed total revenues by $862,000, largely due to funding the redundancy project at $1 million level. Is that consistent with our prior rate increase and spending nearly $500,000 on questionable legal fees? Probably impacted our ability to fund redundancy at some point. Do we have any estimate of what the overall impact of that was? Obviously, it wasn't good. I appreciate that the budget is, you know, kind of a crystal ball look at one bit, but it's a projection as well. So I don't really criticize the projections that are made because my crystal ball is no better than yours, I'm sure.
Okay. No other questions? Are we ready for public comment? Julie Tacker again, and I want you to pass the budget.
because you've got work to do. But I think in the future what we need to see is monies associated with redundancy and the rate increase in maybe a whole new fund, just somehow a way that you can track it, because that is what you promised the ratepayers, that that rate increase would go to. And clearly, when we're asking questions still today, how those funds were impacted by excessive legal bills, we can't see that. We can't see it. When Gerhard Huebner came to work for you in April of 2016, just a month later, he had District Co-Counsel Wendy Stockton write a memo for the board. And this may be helpful for your staff. The date of it is May 17th, 2016. And it refers to that ordinance that Mr. Hill brought up, 1981-3. And it talks about, and I actually don't know why he asked for this memo, why Huebner asked Stockton for the memo, other than his own unfamiliarity how the funds were supposed to work. But that was presented to your board, and the money held in Fund 20 is to be used for emergency treatment plant maintenance and repair, to be borrowed at no interest, if ever borrowed, to equalize the cost of sewage installation beyond the trunk system, which applies to specific charges for specified properties, and for a sinking fund for plant expansion and sewer line enlargement. So that's her short answer on how the Fund 20 is supposed to be used. Maybe we go back and look at this memo, look at the actual ordinance. Maybe you have a different opinion or a different analysis of what that ordinance meant. And maybe it's time to change the ordinance. I really don't know. But if, you know, ordinance is law, and you need to be following your own law.
I'd like to speak to the enterprise, the money that was, the money, the rate increase that was put towards the redundancy. It seems to me that that would be an enterprise fund, and I don't know why it's not handled that way. I'm not sure that, I just don't understand why it's not. It seems like that's what Mr. Hill's asking for, is that it is handled as an enterprise fund, that money goes into a fund, and it's only spent for the purposes of rate of redundancy. So I'd like to get an answer for that.
All right, we are finished with...
Need to have a resolution. I make a motion.
Yeah. Do we have a motion to...
Yeah. I make a motion. We adopt resolution number 2018-395, approving the final budget for fiscal year 2018-19.
Second, for purposes of discussion.
Okay.
I have suggested several times, and I concur with the speakers that brought forth the idea of establishing a separate fund, or that could be within any of our three funds. We might even establish that such a significant project to the district that we might even establish a separate fund for it, but to track the funding of the redundancy project as we go forward, because our rate increase was largely predicated on the idea that we would use those monies to fund the redundancy project. And I'm concerned that that is a very large quantity of money, and I think it deserves special accounting so that we don't see it frittered away, as it were, on other types of when there's large income that's not earmarked properly, then that invites mischief in my experience. So I would like to see that more strongly accounted for.
I agree with that.
I mean, before we do something like that, let me explain to you what the Bartles and Wells report did. It actually showed a period of increased expenditures on bringing the plant maintenance, some plant maintenance items up to date. And so it actually said that we were spending some of this rate increase on bringing the plant up to date. There's also, Bartles and Wells report explains that some of the money that's already saved by the district in the LAIF fund and in the county treasurers will be spent towards this project. So that's not money that's due from the rate increase. That's money that was already collected. So it's there's certainly nothing in the ordinance that says the rate increase is going towards the redundancy project, because there's a mixture of funds going to the redundancy project, including funds that have already been saved. So if you, I understand what Director Hill is trying to accomplish, because he feels there are expenses that were unnecessary from the district and by the district. I don't know that I disagree with that. But to hamstring the district to isolate funds so that it may not be able to use those funds for necessary maintenance items creates a bit of a difficulty. And it's not something that I would encourage a board to do, because you end up in a situation where you may have things you need to solve and they become very difficult to solve. I encourage you to put off anything like that until you get a Bartles and Wells report updating your financial status to see where you are. If it looks like there's a way to do this without causing the district some substantial threat to its operation, then maybe that's something you want to consider. But I certainly would encourage you to wait till you have some actual numbers before you, a spending timeline, how that spending timeline should be accommodated before you move ahead and throw numbers at this that we're not aware of what it may cause the district.
Well, and I also question making those kind of changes to a budget that at this point in time when it needs to be approved, doesn't it, in the end of this month?
Certainly, it's always best to have a budget in place at the time you go into the time that budget is required.
So. Yeah.
My comment was geared towards this is something we need to look at down the road, not in this budget.
And I think the Bartles and Wells report will provide you an opportunity to consider your options in that.
Good.
Well, I certainly look for, and I seconded the motion to approve the budget as it's presented, but I certainly look forward to the Bartles and Wells updated report, but I do think back to the Bartles Wells report that supported the rate increase, and prominent in that was the funding for the redundancy project. And
it certainly is the major driver.
If we set that aside, again, we're speaking about large amounts of money that would probably come to the board for assignment anyway, but it would be good in my mind, and to help reassure the public that we're being good stewards of the funds, that the board can approve reassignment of that money as necessary. But I'm looking at $500,000 in legal fees that was never approved by this board. And I want to make sure that we don't subject our ratepayers again to a fiasco of that nature. So my second stands.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
motion is passed.
No.
Roll call. Roll call vote. I'm sorry. Thank you for bearing with me.
Director White?
Yes.
Director Hill?
Yes.
Director Nichols?
Yes.
Motion carries unanimously.
And we are back at our favorite item.
I've so missed not participating in this. Well, I did participate in it to begin with, if you recall.
I suggest we take a 10-minute break before we get into the personnel manual.
And for those who are anxious, we'll be starting on section 7042-1.
You're doing great. Thanks. I always forget to make a comment. I call the meeting back to order, and we are going to go to 6D, discussion of personnel policy manual updates. So we shall continue that, beginning with page 7042, employment standards. I'll give you a second to scan through that.
Oh, I'm okay. I've read it before.
Okay. Oh, all right.
Yeah.
I have no questions on page one. Jim?
My copy has a spelling error in the third line from the top, plant operations and to meet regulatory requirements.
And tow. Okay.
Maybe they're going to tow the line. I'm not sure.
All right, we'll mark that. And go on to 7042.
I think there's an inconsistency here also with grade one operator certification within 2 years of hire.
Oops.
I think
this is still on
page one.
Oh, still on one, okay.
The bottom section says knowledge of, and it has a bunch of bullet points. The line immediately above that says grade one operator certification within 2 years of hire. I believe our grade one discussion requires that within 6 months. So I'm confused why a position as important as lab tech would have a different grade one requirement.
It's certainly not uncommon to have lab technicians not have an operator's license at all. I think the idea is that because we're a small plant, that duplicity in that area is preferred, and lab techs are very valued and difficult to retain, so we're trying to give some time for that to occur and still meet our goal.
Would it also
primary goal, their primary performance is not to be an operator at the plant.
To run the lab. Okay.
Would it also be something that would take a while to get?
It can, especially some time in service, there's a time and service requirement for the operator one, and if you're performing your lab duties, you will, that's actually a really good point, you may have some difficult in a short period of time getting that time and service at the plant. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Is that, along carrying that thought forward then, is something that we would like to see maybe operator certification is desired for the position, but not required?
It's certainly a possibility. I'd prefer to go back to the guys. There are one of the items that this allows for is allows for another person to be on rotation for weekend duties once this person gets certified. So when that happens, it allows you to free up that rotation a little bit, or to fill in if somebody's on vacation or something. It just provides you more options. So before I would make that suggestion, I'd certainly want to run that by the operators at the plant. And being they're the operators, my guess is they're going to say they like that option there.
Can a grade one operator independently operate on the weekends?
Yes, that's what I believe that's the case, yes, in our plant. Because they're under the supervision of the superintendent at all times. So,
On a weekend call-out?
It allows them to take call-outs, certainly.
Okay, then moving to page two, there's multiple occurrences I think we've commented before about plan ahead, prioritize. It just should just say plan, prioritize, and organize assigned work. And then 7042, page two, the second bullet from the bottom. It says inefficient or dangerous operations conditions. I would either change that to operating conditions or strike that in just inefficient or dangerous conditions. I'm not sure what an operations condition is.
Okay.
I don't see that. How are you going to change that, James?
I would change it either to operating conditions or strike the word operations entirely.
And just put dangerous conditions.
So it would just read dangerous conditions.
Yeah. Because it might not be something directly operational. It might be.
Agreed.
A broom in the way.
Okay. Did we get that?
Yes.
Okay. Page three.
Did you decide to strike it or to change it to operations?
I think strike operations would be
I think that's the best. That's yeah. Probably the best solution.
Dangerous conditions, period.
Page three, the top bullet on page three, it's just a matter of preference, I guess, to determine plant compliance with state and federal regulatory agency requirements, probably. I'm not sure if compliance with the agencies is actually
accurate.
Term and plant regulatory compliances? Yeah.
Then the seventh bullet says, monitors level of laboratory supplies and recommends requisitions of supplies. So you're going to recommend that somebody requests, basically. I would just say requisitions supplies as needed.
No, I think...
That's actually the duty of the plant superintendent, so, I mean... That's the duty of the plant superintendent to requisition supplies, so I might ask you to reconsider that.
Yeah, I would agree with that, having worked with that before. The person that does the actual requisitioning doesn't necessarily keep tabs on the supplies. It could be recommended by others.
Okay. Under working conditions, near the bottom of that page, it says noise traffic. I think there's a comma missing there.
Yeah, just a misplace. Hazardous materials. I think the "and" is just out of place. Hazardous materials, noise, and traffic. Yeah. Semicolon, yeah.
Yeah, probably noise and traffic.
Okay.
Makes sense.
I have a question, being new to the industry here. And 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, monitors, bullet 9, monitors condition of analytical instruments and performs preventative maintenance of equipment. Is that logical, that the daily workers can analyze whether their instruments are working correctly and perform maintenance on?
I think this is the lab technician.
Oh, lab tech. Okay. Okay. Oh, yeah. You're right. All right. Thank you. Why was it the last physical demands? Why was lift and carry changed to move?
I think there was a feeling that lift and carry covered move, or move may cover more stuff than lift and carry. So
okay.
If you needed to move, if you move something in a different way that was not considered lift and carry, then that would be covered.
Okay, thank you. Are we okay for page 3? All right, then we go to 7050, bookkeeper secretary employment standards.
Under distinguishing characteristics, this is 7050, page 1, second paragraph.
Mm-hmm.
I would strike the incumbent. It's a job description, not a discussion of what the current...
Right.
Yeah, we need to put something in incumbent's place.
How about must provide financial and support to the district? And then work independently, take work, the S off of works?
Well, you could say it's a single class administrative position. That provides financial...
Yeah, that's just, even easier. You don't have to change it as much.
Continue that sentence.
You don't have to change the plurals to singulars.
Right.
And since it's put in the plural, provides financial works independently, is okay. Anything else on page one?
No.
Then page two. I see nothing more. Page two.
Two things concern me on page two. On the bullets near the bottom, about the sixth from the bottom, we're asking the bookkeeper secretary to effectively and efficiently implement operations changes.
Yeah.
I don't believe that has any place in this description. And then below that, take a proactive approach to problem solving, including recognizing unusual, inefficient, or dangerous operation conditions. I wouldn't expect the bookkeeper secretary to do that either.
Well, that might have a dangerous
condition. We want all our employees to do that. So,
I agree everyone should be concerned with safety, but I don't expect an unlicensed person to be able to deal with or recognize the operations conditions.
So you want to just take operations out, because that would be
like we did before.
Yeah. I mean, that's
right.
That opens up the broom and whatever the there might be office conditions that.
Okay, so we're going to strike effectively and efficiently implement operations changes. And we're going to delete the word operations from the next bullet.
Okay.
Well, how about effectively and efficiently implement changes? Just remove operations
again,
from that.
Yeah, so take the operations out.
Yeah.
Because if there are changes in procedures, she had would have to make adjustments in her work.
Yeah, that's kind of a throwaway, I think.
Yeah. Okay, page three. I don't like their use of the plural in all of these bulletins on the typical duties. Performs a duty, you performs a duty. Processes, prepares, processes, performs, performs. Records, establishes, explains. I think the S needs to be strict in all of those.
Well, you run into some problems. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6,
six from the, because you have processes, or the, no, the sixth one, seventh one up, performs. There's so many of them, I don't know. Here's one, performs account, reconciliation, functions, prepares, journal entries, coordinates, reports.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Resolutions, contracts, agreements, and budget.
And provides support to other district departments. Do we have a consensus that it's just...
How about we'll just go through and make sure that the plural and singular align with the verb? Is that...
That would be very appreciative, yeah. Yes.
I think that's what I hear a journalist wants me to do, so...
Yes. Proofreads materials for accuracy.
Yeah, every single bullet. Yeah.
On page 4, I notice we have a Latin word has crept into our...
Oh, where did you find that?
This is on the fifth English bullet, user. Processes ad distributes.
Oh, geez. Good job, Jim. I have a severe question on 1, 2, 3, 4 from the fourth bullet, from the bottom on page 4 of the bulleted items. May serve on a variety of project teams or committees. Oh, okay. My first reading, I left out the on. Okay. Are we ready for 7060, page 1?
I have a question under education, minimum qualifications. It says education experience and then say, or any combination of education, training, and a work experience. Would that preclude them from having a high school degree or a GED?
It would allow them not to have a high school degree.
Yeah, that's...
Degree.
Yeah.
It wouldn't preclude them from having one.
I mean, that's what I meant was, yeah.
So we'd need to delete that education line?
No.
Or
it says okay. Education experience or any combination of. I just wanted to clarify that the high school or GED could be waived.
On page 1. Why do we need principles and practices of excellent customer service
We're not really a direct customer service facility.
We do have customers that come on site.
Okay.
Those would be primarily brine haulers or disposers. We also have vendors that come on site. So
all right.
There is some exposure to the public.
Okay, good.
On 7060, page 2, second bullet from the bottom of the page, the language that's used throughout is required to wear personal protective equipment appropriate for job assignments, and somehow that's eliminated here.
Good catch. Mm-hmm.
Are we ready for 7061, maintenance assistant?
Mm-hmm. Why the difference in education requirements?
Presently, we don't have a maintenance assistant assigned in our. Do we? Where is that, Carlos? It's a part-time person. That could be changed to alter that because.
I just wondered if it should match the other one.
Yeah, this is generally a part-time position, so its education requirements are certainly not any more demanding than the. Other.
And it doesn't say, it says 12th grade, but no GED.
Right.
Say. Well, and just the general mechanical electrical knowledge is the important feature there as a maintenance person.
The point is brought up, I think, is it says equivalent to completion of 12th grade. Throughout the document, we've used high school graduate or GED.
Right.
And I wonder why we're not doing that here.
Yeah, that was what I...
Certainly can be changed to do that.
Yeah.
It does, in the next paragraph, any combination of education, training, or work experience. But it should be consistent insofar as the regular education line goes. Anything else on page 1? Anything on page 2?
8,000, Appendix A.
I don't see anything on that. Straightforward form. I always look at these things on the basis of the employee trying to fill them out.
Yes.
And
there's it's always some redundancy in these questions, I believe.
Yeah,
but if it's not clearly stated, it will, and it will be on the next, hopefully.
Yeah, but I was just... state specific reference to any laws, policy, rules, regulations. Would that also include anything in this policy manual? I wonder if we need to say the policy manual itself.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it says here policy, so that would cover it, I guess.
Right. And including instruction.
Just reads very complicated.
Appendix B. Hesitate to criticize or argue over any form like this that has been vetted by so many organizations, unions, professional HR people. Appendix C.
Well,
I have some concerns with Appendix C. First of all, it is buried in an appendix at the end of the document. Seems to me this should be probably at the very beginning, and it mentions honesty, integrity, and fairness in dealing with district employees, yes, with contractors, yes, individuals that are visiting the district, yes, but I would specifically cite district regulators in those first two values. I think that's important enough to put first, so we say honesty, integrity, and fairness in dealing with district regulators, employees, and with contractors and individuals that are visiting the district. I'd like to see that in both the first and second lines.
Yeah.
And then I think this is an important enough statement that it belongs at the beginning rather than buried in an appendix at the end.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if we want to say something about regulating agencies or representatives from regulating agencies or something.
That's you can come up with appropriate language.
Say it any way you want, just cover it, okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I don't like... number six is just kind of strange.
Number bullet six?
The last.
Yeah.
Each employee will bring daily passion for quality and excellence to the job they do at the district facility. Work takes them inside the district boundaries or outside. Each district employee acknowledges that this dedication increases the value of the work.
That's just supposed to be a pep talk, I guess. I don't know if there are many people who approach their daily work with passion.
Well, yeah, I have a daily passion to go work at the sewer plant. It's a little...
Hey, there's some of our people have a lot of compassion about working at
well,
the sewer.
Well, no, plant. No, yeah, I'm sure they have compassion. I have a compassion on payday, and I'm sure they do a good job. It just seems like kind of a strange bit of...
I believe our employees do have a passion for quality and excellence, and I strongly support
that's true.
That.
That's true.
When their work takes them inside the district boundaries and outside? It just...
District boundaries.
I'm sorry.
That's not a brick wall. Yes, wherever they go, work takes them.
Yeah.
Wherever their work takes them.
Hey, yes. It's a core value, and it is a pep talk, and I'll go along with it. In my work experience, it wouldn't encourage me.
Are you okay with that, Planner Jim?
Mm-hmm.
Good. And
Appendix D, Code of Conduct. Oh, my.
The only question I have on this one is, number four, gifts, stipends, or gratuities. Employees acknowledges that the solicitation or has been changed to and. And I think or is a better choice there.
And or.
Could be and or. But I think solicitation of gifts is in itself unacceptable. And I don't want that to be necessarily combined with solicitation and receipt. Either leave it as or change it to and/or.
It needs an of after solicitation. Solicitation of and or receipt of gifts, et cetera.
I'm not as concerned about the of as I am the or.
The and or, I think, is good.
Number 10, use of communication equipment and services. Private use of district communication equipment is prohibited. It talks about telephones, cell phones, computers. I would think that's unnecessarily harsh and probably unenforceable at an occasional limited use of a telephone to call your family if you're going to be late or something doesn't bother me. And the way this is written seems to be unnecessarily harsh.
But in our particular situation, we have a floating district cell phone that goes with the employee who is on call or who is working that weekend. So they generally have their own cell phones. And because to rely on a floating cell phone, it's not something I think that they're trying to do. So I think that's kind of a unique situation for the district. It's
right.
Well, having been to the district office, I've seen telephones on some of the desks.
Sure.
And is this intending to prohibit? That's what it says. Private use of district communication equipment is prohibited, period. So does that mean that an employee can't pick up one of those desk phones and call home to?
No.
course. I mean, that's not our intent.
I just want to be clear, because this sounds pretty draconian to me.
Yeah, we can take a look at that. I mean, there are use of communication policies that are very extensive, so we can certainly look at modification here.
Mm-hmm. I think it's important that it's considered public record, and you know, you have no right to privacy. That's right. An important statement.
Yes.
Yeah, I have no problem with the no right to privacy. I just have a problem with prohibiting somebody from calling to answer a family emergency and using a district phone to do it. Also on 2.10, there's a redundant other. It says, shall not be used for any other purpose other than...
For any purpose. Buzz right by that one. Thank you.
One of those others is...
You're right.
Excessive.
Yeah. To the work performance and evaluation report.
I was go back to 211.
Okay. 211.
Is that an enforceable policy?
Yeah.
Is that even something that could ever be enforced?
I'm certainly not a person to ask that to.
No, but I mean, it just seems like somebody's out doing something on their own time and their own.
I have favorite.
And who defines
if they were in public
conduct or behavior that discredits the image of the reputation of the district? I don't like things that are just not enforceable, or I don't know.
Yeah, the only thing I could envision is that, you know, somebody goes on break or lunch into Oceano and they're wearing their uniform and they do something they shouldn't do. How are we going, unless it's bad enough to call the police, how are we even going to find out about it?
Well, this doesn't imply while they're on duty.
Right.
So I'm the FBI officer dancing at the off-duty dancing, and I drop my gun and shoot somebody. Yeah. I mean, but is that...
Yeah.
Well, we don't know the answer to that one quite yet.
Well, but I'm just using that as an example. I mean, when people are on their own time... Because that doesn't say at work.
Yeah, I think that there's been considerable discussion about this in the past, and perhaps we can see if there's a more appropriate policy. I mean, the typical thing is, what if somebody is arrested on a felony off of work? Is he terminated for that? I mean, I've seen that situation dealt with. Well,
I don't think so.
We have specifically item 6 on the previous page talks about unlawful conduct.
Yeah.
So I think that's addressed elsewhere.
Right. Well, again, I kind of relate it to the military. If you are in uniform and commit any sort of thing, then you've shamed the whole organization. And I don't see that as a probability here.
Let us refer this to people who are human resource professionals.
Thank
to see
you.
If that's
Thank you.
The way
I mean, 6 makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we've also had situations where people get intoxicated and yell in rave at customers about district stuff, or not in district stuff, but about agency stuff, and they are not on duty, and it creates a bad situation for that particular agency. So the question is, is that covered under this?
But if they're if they're yelling at people, they're disturbing the peace, and it's unlawful conduct. I'm just
maybe.
I'm just being a.
It's it is
a
pretty
thorn
nebulous.
In the saddle here.
Yeah. However, if we didn't have anything at all, and something did happen, then we've got a problem. So I think it's innocuous as it is.
Well. Okay, move on. I'm taking up time. I'm sorry.
Employee work performance. Again, the form I'm not going to argue with.
It's pretty standard.
Who does the work performance and evaluation reports? Plant
depends on the employee.
The plant superintendent? Or?
The plant superintendent is in charge of making sure the operators are evaluated.
And the administrator for?
For the plant superintendent and the bookkeeper. There's a plant supervisor who may provide input into the, and there's a senior operator who may provide input on the operator's report.
Okay. Okay. Employment application. Boy, they tried to cover everything in that equal opportunity. Including but not limited to. Now, why is age over 40 in parentheses?
That's the federal law.
It's a protected class.
It is. It's a protected class.
Really?
Yep.
Gee, I didn't realize that. That's nice. I'm sorry. My goodness. And then anything on the application strike you? Six pages is on a very long application. Did we make any revisions that would change item 16 on page 6 of Appendix X, which refers to pursuant to section 5070, which is stricken in 5060 in its place?
I'm sorry, I'm not sure I understood the question.
I think we need to check back and
see what
see that that is, it goes with the 5060.
It is.
Wording. And is 5070 stricken? Large parts of it are
5060 appears to be correct.
Looks like it is. Well, there's some strikeout work on 5060 and on 5070, so.
It's 5060.
So why is one section stricken and another not?
5070 is harassment, discrimination.
Yeah, because it's not, that's not what it's referring to, the drug policy, and that's 5060.
Yeah. Yeah. Just a new number.
Oh, okay. Okay. So we're okay.
I think a lot of the last of this is pretty much boilerplate that's approved for everybody.
I think some of it certainly is.
Are we ready for Appendix G?
No comments.
Pardon?
Nothing.
Nothing?
Nothing.
H?
Nothing more.
This is, H is a form that goes to the employee.
That right? Goes what?
Yes.
Yes.
And I believe that what happens is they are acknowledging the amount of physical work they would be required to do on the job site.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Environmental factors.
And their physician has to agree with that.
Yes. Okay. Right, statement by applicant and statement by physician. Yeah. My gosh, we're finished.
Is there a possibility of making a motion to move this forward?
I think we're going to take your comments back, have them evaluated, make sure they're in compliance with the most recent
public comment.
Right. Yes. And of course, we have a comment next.
Chris Victorine, and on the laboratory technician on the education, since a bachelor's degree in chemistry is required, I think it's kind of redundant to you just strike out graduation from high school or GED. And then on the bookkeeper secretary.
I'd like to point out that it's the bachelor's degree is desirable.
Oh, thank you.
And I have a friend who has an OGED or high school degree that has a college degree.
No
from
kidding.
University of California, Santa Barbara.
And then a question on the bookkeeper secretary, the supplemented by 30 semester units of college level coursework in accounting. I'm not sure where that requirement comes from. A federal auditor and an accounting degree in Cal Poly would require like 24 to 26 semester units. I'm not sure why a bookkeeper would require 30. And then in the experience paragraph, I just got a couple clarifications. The third line down, it says cashier, and it's crossed out. But on page 3, mid-page, where it crosses out operates and, it says balances a cash register.
Oh.
So I don't know if there is a cash register.
There is not. Is there?
There's petty cash.
There's petty cash, yeah. There's not a cash register.
Oh, okay. A register for your petty cash. Okay. And then on that same line, it says business tax and utility billing. And on page 3, those two lines are crossed out. I don't know if that's a requirement and it's just an overlooking or if it's just wording.
Yeah, I can't. I'm not sure I follow you, Chris. I just got lost.
On the third line down in experience.
Which page,
please? Page 1 of the bookkeeper secretary. It says it has cashier and then it has business tax and utility billing. But on page 3, the two paragraphs that are crossed out, it says processes business tax receipts, and it's crossed out that that's not done. And processes utility bills, that's crossed out as it's not done. I didn't know if it should be crossed out in the experience or not crossed out on the duty.
We'll take a look at that. It may be that should be the case.
This came up in your discussion too on the where it says, or a combination of education, training, and our work experience to demonstrate to meet the above minimum requirements. But that's basically saying we want a high school or GED and we want a certain amount of semester hours and experience, but it doesn't really matter. We can change it. That's not a requirement. Is that what that means?
Yes, it does.
So those are similar to the laboratory. Those are desired, but not required. Someone could come in.
Or any combination.
So someone could come in with a GED and.
Someone could come in with 30 years of accounting experience and not have graduated from high school and be awesome. And you may choose to hire that person even though they don't have minimum education.
Those things. Okay, so it just gives you some flexibility in the candidates. Okay, thank you.
Shirley Gibson, Halcyon. I'd like to ask the board to please speak right into your microphones. When two or three people are chatting in the back, it's really hard to hear. And I know Mary is taking notes of the meeting. And I think that should be just a common courtesy that people, you know, they have their chance to come up here. And I hear people talking while I'm talking. So anyway, I think it would be courteous if everyone could be quiet. Sometimes it is boring, the subject that you're going through just like this, but, you know, that's why we come here, to listen to you, not to chatters.
Thank you. Julie Tacker, and I'd like to start with the appendix. G, so it's 8060. Jesse, I'm probably messing this up. Is she coming out here? No? Okay. All right. And I just looked it up because I looked it up on my phone. Like, now I'm only one-handed. Thank you. It
It's the second page of 8060, Appendix G. You are asking, have you ever been convicted of a crime? And I don't know if you saw the news. It's been about 6 months or so ago. But there's a new law that you're not allowed to ask that question anymore. So I think your human resources person is needing to look at that and maybe remove that from your application process. Just FYI there. With 8,000, Appendix A, the grievance form. I'm having trouble with the second bullet, statement of grievance and what occurred to have violated, misapplied, or misinterpreted the above reference and on what dates. This didn't make sense to me, and I tried really hard to understand it, and it just seems like there's words thrown in here that don't fit. So, statement of grievance, all by itself, the aggrieved will simply tell his story, and I don't think you have to... there's just too many words that don't make sense there. So maybe you could relook at that. And then where you have, in some of these job descriptions, where it talks about the conditions of the working conditions, working in a wastewater treatment plant, water distribution and wastewater, there's no water distribution. Not yet, anyway.
There actually is.
I guess you have your own wells and stuff. Okay. But you don't say odors. And I know you had somebody in your employ who had trouble with the odor of the sewer plant, and you're definitely going to have that, and I think that should be disclosed in every single one of these job descriptions. And then, if you'll allow, since I had to fight or wrestle with the microphone, I was curious if Amy was consulted on the bookkeeper description, just a question, and then there was one more. I guess it was just the odors. Yeah, back to the working conditions. Clearly, there's offensive odors at the plant.
It's a little Thank you.
Earthy. Thanks.
Odors aren't hazardous, are they?
I don't know. It smells like
earth.
Yeah, there's a line in the wastewater industry. I don't know. It smells like money to me. I'm not aware that odors are hazardous. We can certainly see if there's any industry standard that is being put forth for that condition.
You just created an air pollution control district fund.
So we can certainly see if that wasn't an odor issue. We can. It was not. We can certainly look and see if that's there.
And I would assume that somebody who was very sensitive to noxious odors would not apply for a job at a sewer plant.
You would think so, but they don't seem... I think one of our employees calls them a sweet smell. So it depends on your perspective.
Yeah, I mean... Yeah, I noticed it, but I figured that odors by themselves, without other toxic materials, are not hazardous.
Well, I think the comment that was made is well taken, because we did have a significant problem with that in the past. I noticed that 8070... Appendix H, page 4, talks about fumes, smoke, or gases, and possibly odors could be added at that point.
Yeah, odors are certainly beyond that description, of course, but we could, we'll take a look at that issue. I mean, it's certainly not worth delving into a huge discussion at this point without me knowing the actual latest conditions in the industry and how they describe it. So let us take a look and see what the industry may give us direction on there.
Okay. Thank you.
All right.
Patricia Price. The thing that caught my ear was conduct of employees when they're not working. And there was some discussion about that. How could it be enforced? And so on. My thought was when employees are away from work and they're socializing, they may comment about their job. They may gripe about their job. If there's someplace in the public where other people can hear them, that could get back to the district. And I think that that could be a real problem, because people should be able to gripe about their job, you know, when they're not there, if they want to, among friends or whatever. So I think that probably, for me, that needs to be struck, and the unlawful one before it is sufficient to cover what you're asking for. But I'm concerned about us going into the private lives of employees and saying they can't talk about what they want to talk about and complain about their job if that's what they want to do. Thank you.
Anyone else? All right, then we are finished with that, and we go to miscellaneous items, which is written communications.
As a point of comment on the undertaking we just did, I would again urge the administrators to look at the at a nepotism policy from such as the state hospitals, which is a page and a half rather than the five-page diatribe that we have suggested here, which is all new. And I can't help but point out that for all the claims that this has been reviewed by legal counsel and it's been reviewed by HR professionals, there's an amazing new technology. It's called spell check. And this document has obviously not ever been subject to something as simple as a spell check. And I'm overwhelmingly disappointed in the quality of work that appears in this document.
I have a question. Does this go back to the union as well first?
Yes, the union will have to review this.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
So there is a fair amount of review that needs to occur at both the district and union level to bring this before it can be brought back to the board.
Thank you.
So we are on written communication now, is that correct?
Correct.
On June 4th, the district received a letter from Ms. Tecker, which you will see before you and is available to the public at the table, which claims a Brown Act violation in regards to a urgency act at a prior meeting. Our council has reviewed this letter and has his comments regarding that, and we certainly were... it's here for the board's knowledge, and if there is board discussion that would occur on this, it's open to that. I don't think that we have anything available for decision tonight because it's not an agendized item, but it's here before you to hear input from council and to hear input from the public.
It seems to me that it is an agendized item 7A.
There is no proposed decision. Okay.
So there's no proposed action to be taken on the item. Deliberation and consideration is all that's necessary.
Okay. Shall we proceed?
Did you have additional comment about that?
Yes. So the communication that the district received alleges that the...
Microphone, please.
The communication received alleges that on May 16th, the district engaged in the violation of the Brown Act with respect to three different actions. One was holding a closed session item on the appointment of the technical consultants and the district administrator. The second alleged violation was in adding an item to the agenda after the closed session. And then the third alleged violation was in acting upon that item on the agenda. Our office has taken a look at the letter. It's looked at the authorities. We're of the opinion that no Brown Act violation occurred, specifically because the Brown Act allows closed session items to discuss and consider the appointment of public employees, in this case, the technical consultants, which are considered officers of the agency. So the Brown Act specifically authorizes that type of discussion in a closed session. As to the second alleged violation, the Brown Act authorizes the legislative body to add an urgency item to an agenda if it makes certain required findings. The letter cites inapplicable code sections in the Brown Act that apply to the calling of emergency meetings, which is a different scenario, a different set of rules, a different set of findings. And then finally, with respect to the third violation, alleged violation, that the board improperly acted on the item that it improperly added to the agenda, because it was properly added, it was properly acted upon. So that's our opinion with respect to this communication.
Anybody have any comments already?
I have none.
Jim?
No.
Public input.
Julie Tacker, and while I disagree with legal counsel, I think we can all agree that this could have been done better. You could have had the closed session to discuss the administrators, but it was a discussion. It was called out as a discussion. So there was not going to be any, and you didn't amend the contract in closed session. But you could have done that at the top of the meeting. You could have had it agendized for the public, no urgency at all. And there could have been a copy of the contract available to the public so that we could speak to the details of that amendment. And that's all I want from this district, is just to be transparent. When you acted on something after the public had gone home, your secretary wasn't here to even correctly take the minutes, because clearly you've sent them back to be amended. The minutes aren't reflective of what happened, and it just could have been done better. And so that actually reflects on the performance of the very administrators who were getting their contract amended. And that's what I really wanted. I think had that been agendized at the top and appropriately, I would have spoken to the performance of your administrators, and that you don't want to amend the contract for any length of time or any 2 months or up to 2 months. We would have had something in front of us to say, you know, make this minimal, make this very intermediate, but not to do what you did without the benefit of the public's input. So that's why I ask that you be transparent from the very beginning, and I think it could have. I know it could have been done better.
Shirley Gibson, Halcyon. I remind the board that the ratepayers are the watchdogs of district actions and finances. As was stated by legal counsel, no violation of the Brown Act happened. So essentially, we had a ratepayer write a letter and just wasted our money, our district money. I resent that. The ratepayers are the ones that matter to the board. Thank you very much.
I'd like to remind Chris Victorine, the public, and the board that in the bylaws, the director bylaws, that the public as a whole is important and they should not be marginalized. It's written in there for a reason that it's not just the residents and the property owners, but the public as a whole. Thank you.
Anyone else? Then we shall go to board member communications.
Yes, and by way of comment on the last item, I certainly agree with the commenter that the item could have been handled much better by the district. Specifically, the item could have been brought to us at the meeting prior to the meeting during which it was brought to us. And again, at that meeting, it could have been handled better by having it early on the agenda or pointed out on the agenda. That would have been far preferable, and I would expect that the district conduct in the future would conform with that. And with respect to one of the other comments, I just note that on any given day in the United States, 50% of the attorneys are proven wrong in a court of law.
I understand that things could have been handled in a better way had we had more forethought before the meeting. And we have our weaknesses, all of us. We missed out on that one. Any comment?
No.
Okay. Any board communications?
I have nothing.
No. All right, then we shall adjourn to closed session. Would you? The attorney needs to read out the closed session items, and we need to have more.
Yes.
And if I comment.
Yes, thank you, Director White. On closed session tonight, the board will be considering public employment for the title of district administrator, and it will have a conference with legal counsel, anticipated litigation, initiation of litigation pursuant to paragraph 4, subdivision D, the section 54956.91 case.
Public comment?
Julie Tacker, and again, we never did get a report out of closed session from last meeting because it wasn't reflected in the minutes. So I wasn't sure that we would see the public employment appointment of district administrator again. I'm hoping there's a status report on the hiring of the new person. With regard to the conference with legal counsel, anticipated litigation, initiation of litigation pursuant to paragraph 4 of subdivision D of section 54956.9, initiation of litigation. I don't know what that is. I'm hopeful that this is the conversation that Mayor Hill has been asking for with regard to initiation of litigation against John Wallace in a civil action. But before you, I'm just hopeful that's what it is, so I have to presume that's what it is. Mr. Wallace pled guilty. Your district needs to capitalize on that. Take the offensive position and go get the people's money. Before you come out of closed session with any decision tonight on whether or not to pursue that, go home and reread the Knutson report. When you come back, ask for Dan Dow or someone from his office to be in your next closed session so that you know what the facts of the case are
and that you are studied up on what you're, what's available to you. I think it is a very important decision, and again, I have no idea if that's what you're going to go in there and talk about, but I'm telling you that that's what I want you to do, and but it's a very important question and an important decision to make, but do it with full education behind you, because it is an expensive decision. You would have to put some money out forward, but I guarantee you, you will get your attorney's fees back, and you will get your ratepayers' money back. And when you see your budget, and we're talking about redundancy and a project that has escalated in price from $6 million, $9 million, $12 million, $15 million, $19 million, $24 million was the last estimated cost of the redundancy project that Mr. Wallace was supposed to oversee more than 10 years ago.
All right. We are adjourned.
Madam Chair, I note that there's an error under item 10. First, I would invite the public to stay for the report out of closed session. But second, it says the next regularly scheduled board meeting on June 20th will be held here. And one of the actions that we took by consent this evening was change of the board meeting location to Grover
next
Beach.
Next month.
Be in July.
That'll be July? Okay.
Yes.
So the next one is then here, followed by a change in July. So
July,
at least we should be publicizing that pending change.
Yes.
Maybe August. Is it July or is it August?
July.
July, okay.
Yes, and you will be needing to look at whether or not you want to have a meeting on the 4th of July. It's the first meeting.
On the 4th of July. Oh, yes.
Oh, of course.
We should maybe have it here so we can all enjoy the technology.
Yes.